today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Where Sly definitely has the audience wrapped around his finger.
Hey everybody, it's Rockin' the Suburbs. I am Patrick Foster, and with me today is
Jim Lenihan. Hey, thanks for having me on the show, Patrick.
Hey, Jim. Sure, Jim. Thanks for coming on. It's only your 2,428th appearance on
something
the show.
Like that. Yeah.
Well, Jim, as you know, over the past couple weeks, we've been hit with two big losses in the music world. And we spent some time recently with our listeners and you and I talking about Brian Wilson's influence and his passing. And we're going to be doing some recordings on the Beach Boys. But we just had time last week, or I think it was even the week before. I've kind of lost track of time, where we just did a very short episode on Sly Stone that I put together real quick. And we're going to have some listeners respond after we ask them to call in and contribute. So they've got to air their thoughts. But we wanted to talk, and I especially wanted to ask you about Sly Stone and, you know, his influence. I know you've watched some documentaries and obviously spent a lot of time listening to his music.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting, I think sometimes when a musician passes, you know, sometimes you can tell by the volume of people who respond, you know, in memoriam. But in this case, the amount of people that responded was huge for Sly Stone, but also so disparate. I mean, it was musicians all across the spectrum, that were influenced by him. So he was a true giant. That invented, gosh, you could say two or three genres, right?
Yeah, completely. I think for me, this will sound like something I've said before regarding other artists, but, you know, it's like another artist that I probably didn't really get into until I was, you know, into my 20s, let's say. I remember probably the only song that I really knew of Sly and the Family Stone that I would say that I really knew well, you know, growing up, would have been Everyday People, just because, you know, that was a song that was just, it was just one of those, you know, big hit songs that you heard all the time, right?
Yeah.
So later on, I would say probably my gateway to Sly and the Family Stone was probably Prince. Like, when you grow up in the 80s as a Prince fan, and then at some point in time as a, you know, music fan, when you start to, you know, learn more about your favorite artist's influences that lead you. I mean, naturally, I think one of them for Prince would have had to have been Sly Stone, right? That whole, like you said, that kind of pulling from all these different genres and putting them all together in a way that becomes something new, where you don't even like pick the genres apart. It's just something that just makes sense, you know, to the listener, right?
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, there's some artists where you could say like, they're really good at different genres, and it's like, this is their, you know, jazzy song. This is their country-ish song. This is their, you know, ballad. This is their hard rocker. With Sly and the Family Stone, it just seemed like everything just fit together. And like, why even try to pick it apart? Like, it's just great music, right? So there's that.
Yeah.
I will say that this album that I'm holding up right here, Sly and the Family Stone's Greatest Hits, just became like one of my favorite CDs at the time, that I just listened to. And so much so that I will say this, I had this experience not too long ago where I was sort of going through and organizing my CD collection again. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of going through everything, making sure everything's in the right order, replacing some of the broken jewel cases, like, you know, doing all the stupid, geeky, meticulous work that made me feel better as a person. And and I, what I noticed was going through that I had some CD cases that were empty. And I think what happened was, I think I took a bunch of CDs out and put them in one of those, like, carrying cases you would have in your car at one point.
Right. Like the wallet.
Yeah,
or
the
whatever wallet.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, had those as, like, you know, ones I would play in my car. And then somewhere along the line, I don't know where that went to. I think that got lost.
Oh, the wallet itself.
Yes.
Yeah.
It might be in the house somewhere, but I haven't come across it yet. So anyway, there was several CDs and I was getting kind of bummed out that those were not in the case. And one of them that was missing was Sly and the Family Stone's Greatest Hits. When I opened it up, it wasn't there.
Ah,
and I was like,
bummer.
This will not stand. And I immediately went online on Amazon or something and bought another one. Like, I had this.
Nice.
This cannot be missing. Like, some of the others, I'm like, I can let those go. Or maybe it'll turn up somewhere down the line. Or I'll find it at a used record store or thrift store at some point in time or whatever. But it's like, this one, no. It cannot be missing from this collection. The other thing about this Greatest Hits album, too, is when my daughter started getting into vinyl. So she's 25 now, and several years ago, she started getting into vinyl. Shout out to listener Bud Verge, who actually gifted her a turntable that he had, an extra turntable. He was like, does she want this? And I was like, yeah, she wants that. So we get the turntable. We get it set up in her apartment. And we go out to the record store to get her some albums. And, you know, she picks out a couple of things, more like newer release kind of stuff. And I was going through the bins looking for, you know, maybe buy her like 3-4 albums to kind of get her started, whatever. And one of the first ones I got for her was Sly and the Family Stone's Greatest Hits on vinyl. I was like, you got to have this.
Perfect.
You know, and I also was thinking, too, why did I pick that for her? Not only because just do I think it's a great album. And when you're starting off, too, with like a small record collection, you know, having a greatest hits is a good thing to have, right? Because, it, you know, it's just, it's all hits, right? You don't have that many to listen to. So there you go. But also, I was also thinking, too, like thinking about her sensibilities as a young person and a modern consumer of music. And I was thinking, like, what would be sort of a classic album that would appeal to her today?
Mm.
And this was released in 1970, but I still feel like, you know, gosh, what, 50 some years later, right? It still feels like it could be recorded now. Like it has, like if you think of like how modern music is put together, because, you know, now most of it's done on computers and everything with all the, you know, the ability to do a lot of studio manipulation, a lot of layering of different things, a lot of, you know, putting in a lot of different textures and different beats and different tones and sounds or whatever. And think about it, like kids growing up today, like that's just what they're used to. And it's like a lot of that's here on this record.
Absolutely. Yeah. Somebody starting out, you know, you've got your funk, you've got your soul, you got your pop, you got your jazz. It's all in that album.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's like a gateway to all those things. That's right. It's really, that's, I can't think of a better gift to give someone starting out with a turntable. I mean, that is just about perfect. Yeah. It's just great.
It looks cool on the turntable too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, it does. And the cover is one of the most iconic that you can see. Did you, after starting off with the Sly and the Family Stone, did you branch into the full albums and listen to some of the longer stuff that's a little bit darker? Because it didn't. I didn't do that until, you know, way past. You know, it's a fairly recent phenomenon that I really dug into a lot of that.
So
stuff.
Interesting. Same thing here, and I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
It really wasn't probably until the streaming era that I really got like deeper into the Sly Stone catalog and listen to like There's a Riot Going On and all that kind of stuff, right? So yeah, I don't know why. I wonder why that is. Maybe just because this Greatest Hits just seems so perfect. It was like, I could just listen to this over and over again.
It's so satisfying. I know. And you know, three or four of those songs are on each of the other albums anyway. Right. So, you know, it is probably, you could make a case as one of the greatest hits, you know, as perfect as you could possibly make a greatest hits album. So,
well, that's funny you say that too, because this CD here that I bought to replace the one I had, let's see, this would have come out. This is a reissue from 2017, it looks like. So it's like Epic Legacy, right? So it's, you know, but yeah. So there's like different, you know, so it's not the original packaging exactly. So, not that they had the CDs in the 70s, but you know what I mean. It's obviously of its time because it says on the back of it, if ever a greatest hits album lived up to its name, it's this one. Decades after its original 1970 release, Sly and the Family Stone's Greatest Hits remains as thrillingly irresistible as ever. You know, blah, blah, blah. It goes on from there, right? So, yeah, if you were making a list of greatest hits, this would be up there for sure. Oh, but, you know, here's one other thing. I did watch Sly and the Family Stone documentary recently that just came out this year or last year, directed by Questlove, who's a big fan. And one song that's not on this Greatest Hits, because it came out later than that, is Family Affair. This gave me a whole new appreciation for that song, because it's like pioneering in the sense of it was like what you would now call like a bedroom recording, right? So it was something he just like did on his own, and apparently it's the first use of drum machine on a record.
Wow.
So yeah, and it's like one of those really super primitive drum machines, like the kind of thing that would be built into a like an organ at the mall, you know, that plays
exactly.
different beats. But he manipulated it in some way, he kind of inverted it. What he did was he took the beat and then he shifted over, so like the one became the three or vice versa. I forget what it is, or you know what I'm saying, music theory stuff. But he shifted it enough to make it cool, you know, not so square sounding. And it's kind of brilliant now that I go back and listen to that song with new appreciation for how great that song is.
Somebody that just loves to learn, and another child grows up to be somebody you just love to burn. Mom loves the both of them, you see it's in the blood. Both kids are good and mom, blood's thicker than the mud. It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
Oh, the bear. What the bear. Still checking each other out. Hey, nobody wants to blow. Nobody wants to be left out.
Absolutely a great point. And I remember reading somewhere, I think it was Variety's obituary, and they had quotes from Questlove. And, you know, he mentioned specifically bedroom pop, you know, was kind of invented by Sly Stone, in his opinion. And, you know, something along the lines of the alphabet that Sly gave us, we're still using to put together music today. Like, it's all his letters that he put together. So, and I don't know how you feel about this. I particularly don't find the notion of the romance of somebody flying, you know, so close to the sun, doing something brilliant and kind of falling away. In Sly's case, I mean, there, you know, maybe you could make a case for it somewhere, but I don't know. To me, you can't help thinking how much could have happened, you know, perhaps where would he have gone in his later years if he hadn't, you know, been so consumed by the demons and all that.
Yeah. That's a story off told in rock and roll, I suppose. And it's sad, yeah. Right? But, you know, we shouldn't romanticize that, I don't think. But people have their own personal struggles, and we should understand that as well. But I will just, you know, I always do this. I'm always like, I'm going to be brief, and then I go on and on. But I will say one last thing, too, and this is, I think, really, really important as well, is the cultural impact of Sly and the Family Stone, led by Sly Stone, that it was an interracial band, and at a time when that was not common at all, and was,
right.
And, you know, was definitely going to raise eyebrows in American culture. I think that just maybe visually in some way also helped the listener or the fans kind of get the band, you know, and what he was trying to do.
Yep.
But I think he just, you know, I think he just wanted, you know, the best musicians, and he also felt like maybe people, you know, coming from different backgrounds might bring different stuff to the band, and, you know, hats off to that. Right. So in some way, and we know this about art, art can do this, you know, he moved the culture forward, and, you know, that's no small thing.
Not at all. And I think you make such a great point about the visual makeup of that band, because I remember the first time I was watching video of them playing live in their prime, and it might even have been on Soul Train or something, I don't know, but they look at, here's this completely funky, absolutely beautiful woman playing in the band, yet she's playing trumpet. And Cynthia Robinson, you know, like, it's incredible. Yeah, like, that doesn't happen. You know, that just totally bends your mind to a different place. It's,
you know,
it's
I was just watching a documentary the other night about Stax Records, and that was also an integrated operation. But a lot of it was kind of kept behind the scenes. You know, a lot of that was sort of kept behind the scenes because in Memphis, in particular, that wouldn't go over very well. In the 60s, let's say. Yep. And so the fact that it was mostly just done, you know, that the house band was Booker T and the MGs, and that, you know, they were in the studio working on things, you know, allowed them to sort of get away with that. You know what I mean? That's probably poor phrasing, but, you know, but
I do.
But Sly was like, you know, no, we're like, we're putting this forward. This is who we are, and this is what we're about. And, you know, and I think, you know, being in San Francisco maybe made that easier, but still, the country had to be won over, and it was.
It was. Yeah. They busted through they drug it forward. They really did. It was amazing. Hard to state, you know, as we said, how pervasive his influence is. So, rest in power.
Yeah.
Sly Stone. We're going to hear from several of our listeners now, and we want to thank them for contributing. Anything else, Jim, on Sly or where we go from
here? That's it. You know, rest in power. And I'm excited to hear what some of the listeners have to say, because this is
Me too.
This is an important band, important American band. I think in a lot of ways.
All right. Well, with that, thank you, Jim. And we will now turn it over to members of the Rock in the Suburbs listening audience.
Hi, this is Mike Wagner, and I'd like to share some thoughts on the passing of Sly Stone. I think, like the rest of folks who listen to this podcast, Sly was not somebody, for most of us, who was in our main orbit in our sort of formative years, for what it's worth. I mean, you know, back in the 80s, radio was far more segregated. There was the channels we listened to, let's be honest, tended to play white artists. And then there was, you know, for lack of a better term, black radio. And there wasn't really a lot of crossover between the two. And unfortunately, I was one of those people who mostly listened to, for lack of a better term, white radio. And it wasn't until I got a little bit older that I discovered Sly. Of course, I heard the hits like Everyday People and Have Fun in the Summertime and some of the other songs. But they weren't albums that I had and then I listened to sort of in my 20s, so to speak. And I remember getting an anthology after I kind of learned about him and sort of wanted to dig in a little bit more, but I didn't know which album to buy because it wasn't like there was like one standard bear Sly and the Family Stone album. So I had this anthology, and luckily it was a double album anthology or double CD anthology, and it had quite a few songs on it and quite a cross spread. So, but I was just blown away by the musicianship, the quality of the songs, everything about it was just fantastic. I mean, this is an amazing musician. And what I didn't really kind of know is that I sort of kind of heard, you know, you kind of like hear things like Sly was like in the news for being arrested or whatever during, you know, the 80s and whatnot. And unfortunately, his life was never to recover from the peak. The fall was pretty quick and pretty rapid. And unfortunately, he never really even sort of went back around. Say, unlike, you know, we've been talking about Brian Wilson since he passed away as well. You know, Brian sort of had that sort of, he'd come back and he'd tour and he'd kind of enjoy the people coming to see him and all that. But the music that he left was just unbelievably great. I mean, he had that sort of period in the late 60s and early 70s. And there's two distinct periods, in case you don't know. I mean, there's like sort of the hit period, the sort of up hit period. You know, that's the Stand and Life and I Want to Take You Higher and all those songs that sort of culminated in his incredible performance at Woodstock. By the way, on the streamings, you can go listen to the whole set at Woodstock, and it is just fantastic. I cannot recommend it enough. I could play some selections, but it wouldn't do the whole show justice. You can really hear a band playing together. And that period sort of ended with a greatest hits album that he released in 1970 that included Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself and Hot Fun in the Summertime, which are included with the greatest hits album, as I recall. And then after that came a different Sly, which was There's a Riot Going On and Fresh. And the first thing I did on the day that he passed when I got home is I rewatched the Sly documentary that's on Hulu that Questlove did. And the sort of the focus or sort of the entry point into the documentary is he's talking about, was Sly a black genius? And he asked several other artists who comment throughout the documentary about, you know, is there a black genius? And I listened to several interviews that Questlove gave when he was sort of making the rounds promoting the documentary, talking about this burden that Sly carried. You know, if he appealed to white audiences, there was that thing that he had with the black community, and he had issues with the Black Panthers wanted him to kick out some of the members of his band, on and on. And then when he made these sort of, for lack of a better word, albums that sort of more focused on black radio and were not really bigger hits, they're not the big hits. I mean, they were hits, but they weren't, you know, they weren't sort of in the zeitgeist of the country, I don't think, as much, and sort of resonate like, you know, Everyday People, which you'll hear in a commercial or something like that. And the documentary dealt with the response to those albums, you know, and they were saying things like, these are not the sort of joyous songs from Sly. This is kind of darker. And where's the fun songs? Where's the up songs? That sort of thing. I mean, that was the general tenor of the reviews. And you just have to believe that was just something that is very difficult for an artist to carry. And I think he carried that burden with him. You know, I have no idea how that affected his downfall. But Questlove was quite eloquent in several of the interviews that it had to be something that he dealt with. But in the end, what's going to be left is the music, which is unbelievable. And I think when you listen to it and you take the time and listen to it and not just have it on in the background and really listen to it and listen to all that's going on in the songs, there's so much going on. There's little bits, there's voices coming in and out. Just amazing. He wrote for different voices, for different songs and within songs and everything else, which is just, there's nobody who really quite did it quite like Sly did. I mean, I just can't. If there's others, they don't leap to mind. So it's a select few. And I'll leave you with one of my personal favorite songs. My all-time favorite is Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself. I can play that on a loop, and I'm perfectly fine. I don't suffer from I get tired of hearing it. I can listen to that forever. It's an endlessly great song. But I know it's been going to be played a lot, probably other places on this episode. But I want to leave you with Running Away, which is a song off There's a Riot Going On. And it's just, I always like this song. It just sounds so cool. The drums are cool, the horns are cool, the vocals are cool. Just a really classic Sly song. And I'll leave you with that. Thanks.
Running away to get away. Ha 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 ha. You're wearing out your shoes. Look at you fooling you. Making blues of night and day. Hee 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 hee. You're stretching out your dues.
Hey, Pat and Jim, Jason Goble checking in. Want to leave a message about Sly Stone. You know, it's funny. My first exposure to Sly Stone's music was probably via a Pee Wee Herman HBO comedy special in the early 80s, where Pee Wee Herman and a couple of musicians did like a 4-minute, 5-minute musical tribute to the music of Sly Stone. And because of its inclusion in that, I guess I initially always thought he was sort of a joke. Flash forward, I believe it's probably my freshman year of college, I got access to that initial Greatest Hits album that Sly and the Family Stone released in, I believe it was 1970. And when you listen to all that great music just put together, the best of his best from those first few albums, I was just blown away by the enormity of it. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, the same person who I probably ended up borrowing their Sly Stone's Greatest Hits saw how much I was playing it and said, well, you also have to listen to There's a Riot Going On, which then, you know, exposed me to another whole side of him. You know, I'll just jump ahead a little bit to the Beastie Boys, Paul's Boutique. You know, I wasn't a huge fan of that album when it was first released, but there was a song that just jumped out at me that I loved from that album from initial get-go, and that was the song Shadrach, which features a sample of Sly Stone's Loose Booty. And that's what got me interested in the later stuff. But the thing that definitely cemented my fandom was, him and the Family Stone and their contribution to the Woodstock movie. And, you know, I didn't see the Woodstock movie until, I think, the 20th anniversary of Woodstock, 1989. And I believe it was MTV who played it. And I ended up videotaping it. And, you know, it's type of thing you're not going to, you know, sit down all the time to watch a four-hour movie. But there were clips that I definitely would continue to go back to as long as I had a VCR. And one of those clips was definitely the Sly and Family Stone clip, which, again, is probably my favorite clip in the movie. You get them doing "I Want to Take You Higher" and just the power of jamming of that band. And that's followed by, you know, the snippet that they included of them doing "Music Lover Higher," where Sly definitely has the audience wrapped around his finger, encouraging the crowd to throw up the peace sign and yell higher. And you can't see the crowd because it's pitch dark, but you can definitely hear the crowd yelling higher in response to Sly's prompts. And for a guy who had such a troubled aftermath in the 70s and beyond, it's just so much fun to see how much fun Sly is having on stage. And I'll just add that, they ultimately released that entire live set of music, and that's become one of my favorite live albums because I just think, it just reflects how great a band Sly and the Family Stone was. And, you know, there's other live stuff. I know they released something from the band performing at the Fillmore, which I think is really good. And I think there's actually a new live release that's coming out some point later this year. But in any event, let me just close with this. Eddie Murphy, used to joke about the greatness of James Brown and, basically how he would command his band and how certain sound effects he would make is such as the high. It was, a James Brown trademark lyric. Well, if that's the exhibit of greatness, I'll say Sly Stone with the "Boom Blacka Lacka" and the "Ooh-ah." Definitely also had his own distinct vocabulary. I know a good chunk of that band is also family members, but that having been said, he assembled one of the greatest bands that has ever existed. This one definitely hit me harder than I thought it would, but rest in power, Sly Stone. You'll be missed.